What is going on, all, and welcome back to the Below the Rim podcast. I am your host and sole contributor this week, Jacob Lieb. Pleasure to be chatting with you all here. Going to do something a little bit different this week. Going to hit you with some quick thoughts. Have a list I'd like to go through as well here, as I've taken in a good bit of NBA action over the past couple of weeks. Missing the rest of the starting five. They are all well. No worries. I know everybody at home was concerned, but shout out to the guys for doing what normal people would do and focus on some NFL playoff football, spend time with friends and family, and recharge as we jump into the back half of the season here. I got some awesome stuff coming up planned for the back half of the season. Going to do a little bit of a mid-season awards next week, which we're really excited about, so make sure to check that out. But excited to be doing something a little bit different here with you all today, going through some of my individual thoughts. And, you know, as many who knows me, can't miss out on an opportunity to stand on my soapbox and be an old man yelling at the clouds. So without further ado, two sections that I want to go through here today. The bulk, we're going to go through what I'm calling my prospect list. That'll be the primary focus of the first half of this. And then I want to give a little bit of a flowers and shout outs to a couple of guys that I'm critical of on the back half of this. So let's jump right into the prospect list. With that, I want to tell a little bit of a quick story. So as you know, our video consumers may see over my right shoulder here, I have a little bit of a sports card collection. I got super into it during COVID, like many others, revisiting my childhood and built up a nice little collection. One card that I, very much remember procuring was a Jalen Johnson rookie card. And that was, at Jalen Johnson 2021 draft. So that product was in 2021. And I remember getting the card and thinking to myself, who is he? Ended up moving it, selling it in a lot, pennies on the dollars probably in terms of what it's worth. And most of that was because I didn't really take the time to think about how roles develop in the NBA. I think a lot of the times players and us as fans and fake media members, we end up pigeonholing guys in. Hey, we watch them for a year. They were drafted in a certain slot, time horizon. And then we extrapolate that value in a very conventional role. That player is going to grow into a role player, a all-star, a superstar. And a lot of it's based on pedigree plus initial performance. And I think what we're seeing a lot, especially in today's NBA, is we really got to break out of that mold. We have top-tier guys that are redefining their games 3 or 4 years into the league. I think the most common one is Evan Mobley, but fan favorite of mine is Cade Cunningham as well. And really just reshaping how we think about them and helping us redefine expectations. Well, those are some of the easier ones. What I really want to focus on here today is guys that don't fit those top draft pick over underperformer roles, but guys that are more in that Jalen Johnson mold and see if we can find that next Jalen Johnson. Can think of this who I'd be investing in from a sports card perspective, or just guys that I really like to keep an eye on to see how their contributions today may dictate a different path than we would start to have an expectation of them as they grow into their NBA future. So a couple kind of qualifications for these guys. No top five picks, right? So we're going to keep this to guys that have been in the league, that were drafted to the league, not in the top five. Try not to give you any household names. So these aren't going to be guys that you're chatting with your aunts and uncles at over a Thanksgiving dinner, or that will be getting the write-ups on ESPN or even some of your other favorite publications. I'm really going to focus on guys that have shown some flashes. So really you won't hear me talking about guys that are still overseas, G League opportunities, the Reed Sheppers of the world that are still on the bench, although he would not qualify for the segment given the pick he's at, and really going to shoot for upside. So there's a lot of guys out there that may end up being, really strong bench players in the NBA. I think I could do a whole different segment on bench players that are directly driving winning in today's league. But for today, I'm going to keep it to the guys that I think can fall in that kind of number two to number four range of option. So with that, let's jump into it. Have a list of five, but going to kick it off with a couple of honorable mentions. First is Gigi Jackson. I think I was super excited to see Gigi. For those that don't know, super high ranked prospect in high school, did pretty much nothing in college, went late in the first round of the Grizzlies, And as the Grizzlies were going through their injury disparate season last year, Gigi showed a lot of those flashes. Big wing, big body, good score, natural athlete on defense. And I was really excited to see what he does this year. Obviously, he's been hurt. Return is in the next couple of weeks, so excited to see what he comes back. So going to be in a wait and see mode with Gigi Jackson. The other one, just because I think they're such, for lack of a better word, freaks that don't fit into any category, I want to give a little bit of love to Amen Nesar Thompson. Obviously, Amen's the number four pick, so he doesn't count. Asar just outside of this. Been talked about a little bit, but they're worth a watch. Just turn on a Rockets game, turn on a Pistons game. They're guys that are going to be contributors on real deep playoff teams. Obviously, they're not the best shooters right now. I think there's going to be a little bit of a come to the table and decide how we deal with a lack of shooting in playoff rotations. But even if they develop a 30 to 35% corner three, they're going to be game wreckers. Just the pure athleticism, ability to go up and down the court, high level defense, finishing at the rim, and some really nice passing touch, especially for a man who, with the ball in his hands, really is another straw that stirs the drink for the Rockets. So, with the honorable mentions out of the way, let's jump into the list. The first guy on here is going to be Bilal Coulibaly. So, the Wizards, not doing their best, is the nicest way to say it. In terms of teams that are unwatchable, the Wizards really still qualify. It's been a rough go, especially with the dynamics on the team. We still are getting a lot of Jordan Poole, a lot of Kyle Kuzma upon his return from injury, and a lot of raw young players. But I really still am bullish on the progression of Bilal Coulibaly. It's the year-over-year improvement for him, right? Last year, he looked lost on a basketball court. Didn't understand offensive flow. When he caught the ball, he was near incapable of dribbling. Anytime to put the ball on the ball on the ground, it was a true struggle. And the defensive upside was there, but it really felt like that was it, that he was going to be a defensive stopper. And for a late or for a lottery pick, right, obviously a lot more upside required to hit on that pick. I'm really loving what I'm seeing this year. I think he has a small offensive package now, a couple of go-to moves, ability to get to the rim, and some more fluidity in his jump shot. That has kind of correlated to like real offensive performance. Beginning of this year, when he was asked to carry a load, shooting the ball really well, had multiple 20-point games to start off the year. And I think it demonstrates that if he continues on that trajectory, he's going to be a do-it-all, all-purpose guard that's going to be a fourth type option that could be a go-to on a winning team. I think this is me saying we're not quitting Bilal Coulibaly yet, and I think he is a part of that Wizards future. I think the worry for them is some of the other pieces surrounding him. What do we think Alex Sarr is going to be? Bob Carrington, some of the other guys that are clearly more a part of the future than the present. But if it was me, I would be investing in Bilal Coulibaly now. As part of this process, I thought we'd try and throw together a couple of comps to think about. And the one that really kind of hit home for me is Rajah Bell. I don't think Bilal Coulibaly has the natural 3-point shot that Rajah did, but he really brought that kind of defensive energy, full package offensive type game. Always knew where to be, solid skills to the table, especially for those Phoenix Suns teams with Steve Nash and Sean Marion. I think if we talk today, modern day, give me a little bit of a Jaylen Brown light, another guy who's really struggled with his handle, really struggled to go left, but has refined that offensive package and taken that athleticism plus defensive prowess and really become obviously a top 15, top 20 NBA player. I don't think the upside there is there for Bilal Coulibaly. I just don't think the movement is as natural on a basketball court. But for number five on the list, I really love the year-over-year growth and a guy that I really want to continue to watch as we go into next year. Number four on this list, Jaime Jaquez Jr. He's kind of painting the case for me as we go in through this stretch without Jimmy Butler. Every time he gets extended run, he performs. Be it in the playoffs last year when they battled with the Heat as a severely undermanned squad, this year without Jimmy Butler. And I really love him in this kind of secondary playmaker role. He's really good catching with the ball with the back to the basket, at the block, at the elbow. having one or two go-to post moves, but as well as being able to pass out of that role. And I think it's a really nice fundamental basketball player to put on the court next to some of your higher flying athletes. He definitely lacks a little bit of that athletic upside. I think that'll cap the potential, but he's a guy that I think you want on the basketball court to play winning basketball. I think the Heat have started to win games without Jimmy Butler. That is a real thing. In the last six, he scored double digits every single game. And they've created a little bit of a three-man flow on offense between Tyler Hero, Bam, and Jaime as the primary creators, with Nikola Jovic playing off of that, Hayward Highsmith, bringing in some of those other guys that really fit nicely into a role. And I think the Heat are a perfect example of when you introduce somebody like Jaime Jaquez with a defined role instead of expectations, it helps clarify everything else around you. And to me, Jaime Jaquez is a guy that just makes everything else make more sense because he takes on a certain type of responsibility that other people are not as comfortable with. He really does have, potentially that capped upside, but that capped upside hasn't stopped others in a similar type of body and role from kind of climbing the mountaintop. I think his, comp for me and the trajectory I'd love to see him take is a little bit of a smaller Hedo Turkoglu. Obviously, Orlando Magic fame, taking them with, an undermatched team to the NBA championship coming out of the Eastern Conference. But I think Jaime at his peak has that same type of opportunity to be ball dominant forward that can start the offense, be able to find his own shot, crafty finisher in the post, and not a liability on defense. So number four on this list is Jaime Jaquez. The guy that I think comes next really fits cl most closely into the Jalen Johnson trajectory and archetype, and that's Max Christie. Really have loved what he's done for the Lakers. Talking about a guy that's come in and just continually changed the way that team plays ever since J.J. Redick has taken him and elevated him to the starting lineup. They have he started in 15 games. In all 15 of those games, he's really just become that primary stopper and that primary guy on the perimeter that you can put on the opposing team's best player and totally transform what their offense looks like. The Lakers are 9-6 in those games, and it's really ramped and changed the roles and responsibilities for everybody else on the court. It allows Austin Reeves not to have to take on that added responsibilities on defense and shifts his focus to being primary player on offense and being that distributor, directly correlated to him with about a 10 assists per game rep ever since making that change. It also allows AD to not have to be put into switches as much because there's less penetration from the primary ball defender. AD can stay home, be a deterrent at the rim, and really kind of slow down some of the more dominant elements of other teams' offensive approaches against the Lakers. The scoring's been there too. In the 15 games he started, he's had five 15-plus point games. He dropped 28 against the Blazers, shooting 38% from three in those games. And I think that trajectory really continues. The thing that I also really love, there's no plays that are being run for Max Christie. He's getting his in the flow of an offense, making himself available and doing all the little things. If I look and correlate that to how Jalen Johnson's progression looked like, this to me feels like early 2023 Jalen Johnson or late 2023 Jalen Johnson. Starting to get run with the Hawks, primarily focused on D, coming in and not being elevated to that starting role yet, but really finding ways to impact the game. He then, early last year in that 2023-2024 season, really took on that role of when given an opportunity, could go and get his, was able to develop a little bit of a three-point shot and really transform how they played defensively. Obviously, Jalen Johnson take a huge leap this year. I think of him as one of the guys that is going to continue to get better. I'm really excited to see how that path continues for Max Christie. Number two on the list is, this one's more of an eye test for me, but a guy that I can't quit, and it's the only reason I watch the Portland Trail Blazers. And that's not Anfernee Simons, it's not Scoot Henderson, but it's actually Shaedon Sharpe. And for me, Shaedon Sharpe moves and gets buckets like a guy who should and will be averaging 25 points in the league, provided that opportunity. He's big. I think he's 6'7". He can play with all small forwards. He is a natural shooter. He moves fluidly. He gets to the rim. He's able to provide an infusion of offense for the Blazers at that really comes without sacrificing the defense. And I think that's the biggest difference why if I was choosing one of these guys to kind of really make the next leap outside of the last guy here on my list, it's Shaedon Sharpe, because he isn't a defensive liability. He moves his feet. He can contest at the rim, and he's able to kind of add a little bit of balanced attack versus guys like Anthony Simons, who, while an awesome shooter and can get beyond hot, is just a complete defensive liability. So when Shaedon Sharpe has it going, and there's been three out of the last five games, he's at 20 plus, helping the Portland Trail Blazers look like a normal organization, even with some of the kind of lack of definition in the rotations. I get really excited about Shaedon Sharpe. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk of, is there a need to move those guards, right? Can we play with all three? Do you have two of them on the court? Is Shaedon really a shooting guard? I'm okay with the Blazers experimenting with him. I think he looks natural at the three. I think he can guard the three. And I think it'll be interesting to see if they keep that three together, if Scoot can kind of up his defense and help the Blazers kind of continue to progress as an entity. The last guy's Trey Murphy III. He's the clear-cut number one on this list. He actually probably doesn't even belong here, but you know, I think the body type and the progression year over year for me, I want to call him out as a guy that I think could be kind of a future all-star in this league. To me, him and Jalen Johnson are very, very similar, and I think that's why I wanted to end with him. I think he's one of the best shooters outside of probably Steph and Dame from three. Natural jump shot, more depth than anybody else has in the league. So good shot for him, way further behind the line, talking 3, 4, 5 feet behind the line, still a good look, still a catch and shoot guy. But really has kind of been around that 39-40% for career and has added other elements to the game. Off the dribble this year has gotten much better, finishing at the hole, drawing contact, increased rates of free throws, as well as the defensive role. Even last night, game 30-point effort, game-saving block to win after a really bad turnover by Jordan Hawkins in a game that the Pelicans, right, probably should have won that whole time. But it was an opportunity for Trey Murphy to kind of clean it up without Zion, be the guy, without Brandon Ingram, be the guy. And I think it puts the Pelicans in a really interesting place. They are a team that, for me, has a guy that, well, he might not be a 1A. I believe Trey Murphy is going to continue to develop into that kind of number two star that with the right complementary pieces, the right system, can actually help a team, you know, go to the championship. And I think it's a perfect case study of Trey Murphy versus J-Dub on the Thunder. And I think if you actually put their two profiles next to each other and said, what do these teams look like if you swap them? I think you'd have a very interesting case. I think J-Dub's a little bit better of an interior defender, which helps the Thunder cover some of their inefficiencies, especially with Chet and now Isaiah Hartenstein out. But I think overall, from an offensive package, I'm taking Trey Murphy III, and I'm really excited to see what he does. I'd love to see the Pelicans kind of clean house, move on from Zion, move on from BI, and turn the keys over to this Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, young core. I think it's a real shame because a guy like Dyson Daniels would have been a really nice fit. I understand the DeJounte Murray appeal, and I'm even okay building around the two of them. But to me, Trey Murphy has to be the guy. I want to see the ball in his hands, and I want to see who he can be as a go-to 15 to 18 shots a night kind of score. Thanks for bearing with me through that. I'm really excited to continue to kind of track to those guys. What we'll do in terms of these little one-on-one sessions is love to hold myself accountable. I think that's one thing in terms of, you know, podcast media we don't get enough of is raise our hand and call out when we missed. And that's the first thing I want to do in this next segment here, which is I want to apologize to Russell Westbrook. For those that know me, that's a really hard thing to do. I don't think Russell Westbrook is a winning NBA player. I have been on this corner for a long time. I don't get off this corner, but I want to give him credit for what he has done in terms of re-energizing the way the Nuggets play. The beginning of the year, it looked really brutal. He was spending a lot of time in the corner, catching a lot of great looks from Jokic and not providing the bench depth that the Nuggets really needed. They looked like they were floundering. Credit to him, a little bit of credit probably to Mike Malone as well. But the way that Russell Westbrook has cerebrally figured out how to play off of Jokic, run the two-man action, and actually spell Jamal Murray in a way that Murray can then ramp up his activity with the second unit has been what has really transformed the Nuggets season. This includes the games without Jokic in terms of the way he's imprinted himself ball dominantly, getting himself involved, and really working within the flow of that system. You can tell watching Nuggets games, which I can't take my eyes off of because every time Nikola Jokic has an opportunity to play, I want to be watching. You can tell the respect that the young guys on the Nuggets have and how a potential Russell Westbrook as a vocal leader is a really nice complement to Nikola Jokic. I did not think in the year 2025 we'd be saying that Russell Westbrook would be a key to a championship team having enough energy and firepower to get through the regular season. But he's not just eating minutes. He's really contributing to winning basketball. Now, what I will say, I'm very concerned with what that looks like in the playoffs. I think there's going to be far too many moments and sequences where Russell Westbrook is found left in the corner and the best look is an open three. I think Jokic has understood that he has to be a little bit more impactful in those scenarios in the regular season. I'm very concerned how it looks in the playoffs. But at a whole, in terms of the impact that he's able to provide to put on a game and the way that they're able to consistently dominate action in minutes without Jokic and what Westbrook on the court, as well as when they're on the court together without Murray, is a wrinkle. And I want to raise my hand up and be the first to apologize. I was wrong. It's been a great transaction for the Nuggets. They look like they're going to make the playoffs. Obviously, this Jokic wrist injury probably going to be the last most important element there, but that'll be the first thing that I want to raise my hand on. Second one is the Warriors. I think that they had a great win last night against the Wolves. I was the guy that stood up here at the beginning of the year and said, I'm buying into this depth experiment. I know that it's not traditional. I know they are going to have to trim their rotation. But if we can get a healthy and rested Steph and Draymond and lean on some other guys like Buddy Hield and D'Anthony Melton and Jonathan Kuminga for minutes, I'm all in on this depth thing. And clearly that hasn't been the case. I think one of the things that goes not spoken about enough is the loss of D'Anthony Melton for the year. I really think he was the exact type of fit, far more so than a Dennis Schroeder, that was really well suited next to Steph Curry. And I think that loss is what really shifted, put it a lot more responsibility in terms of regular minutes on Buddy Hield, regular minutes on Kuminga, as well as now after the trade and kind of reorganization on Dennis Schroeder. And D'Anthony Melton is a much better defender than any of those guys. He's also a very good catch and shooter that needed to be respected, as well as a guy that has a little bit of juice. Obviously can't predict injuries, but it's been a little bit of an unmitigated disaster since then. Obviously, the Warriors are staying afloat due to the brilliance of Steph Curry, but they're in trouble. And I think the most prudent and most appropriate action here is to acknowledge and just to have a honest internal conversation and come to the table and kind of make a move. And for me, I think some of the dialogue and discourse from Steve Kerr and Steph Curry in terms of not wanting to mortgage the future and understanding how organizations work makes a ton of sense if they had pieces that they were really excited about. They've shown us over time and time again that they're not excited about Jonathan Kuminga. He is the only guy that has kind of that weighted value or future, and he's injured right now. I think if they want to commit to Kuminga, they should commit to Kuminga and sign him and pay him. But I think it doesn't touch on what the biggest point is of what is wrong with the Warriors, which is in 2021, the Warriors won the championship over the Celtics because there were times during that series that Andrew Wiggins was the second best player on the court. He was unbelievable defensively. He was shooting above 35% from three. He was a 20-plus point per scorer in that playoffs. He was the, more so than Clay, he was the guy in go-to crunch situations, one-on-one, could go and get a bucket. Simply has not been that guy since. And he's obviously had some off-the-court issues. He's had some on-the-court issues. He's really been unable to tap back into that mountaintop-type performance. And that's really what's missing. And I think the Warriors need to be able to, you know, address their roster, understand what's going on, and say, is Wiggins or Kuminga going to be able to get to that level for us to compete? And if the answer is no, one or both of them need to be moved on, because the reality is there's not a future there, two-path timeline or anything that's worth holding on to. And we deserve as much Steph Curry as we can get in our life. He is the most fun, watchable, enjoyable superstar. And as basketball fans, and for kind of the national prevalence of the game, we deserve as much Steph Curry as we can get. All righty. Wrapping up the first solo podcast. So that was a pleasure to kind of get some thoughts out. Hopefully enjoyable for you all. Really excited to keep track of kind of our prospecting list and where we're going with that. And we'll be back to regular scheduled programming with the rest of the starting five next week. As always, thank you all, and we'll chat soon. This has been Below the Rim.